What's up, everybody? I'm Alan Hain, the Lawn Care Nut, and this is episode 4 of Lawns Across America. So I'd like to welcome everyone back to the Lawns Across America podcast. We are moving now into the second half of February 2019, and as I've been saying, the lawns are heating up for sure. This week we have a lot of questions that are maybe a little bit different than we've had before, which is good because you can kind of just see things are kind of developing, the season is coming along, and so the questions that are coming in are starting to also develop along with the season, so I think that'll be important. Now, before I do go into our Lawns Across America for the week, I did want to make a quick announcement. I know a lot of you have been waiting to find out when I'm going to be able to release my Prodiamine. It's a granular 0.38% Prodiamine product. I have that ordered. It's actually being trucked as of tomorrow up to my warehouse, and I'm going to go ahead and release the pre-emergent guide and our new updated warm season guide on Friday. Those are all going out. So everybody that's on the email list, you're going to get the fresh updated pre-emergent guide, and that's going to be sent out to you, as well as everybody that's purchased the $25 paid guide for the warm season turf. That's for Bermuda, St. Augustine grass, centipede, zoysia, and Bahia. Any of you guys, you will get triggered the brand new updated warm season ebook. It's well over 100 pages this year. I think last year's was maybe 35 or 40. I've updated a lot of different things in there. I feel really good about it, actually. I had a good time writing it and getting through it and really trying to speak to you in a way that'll help you to understand and help you to, you know, bring things together for you. And for those of you that are listening, this is not a pitch, and I don't pitch a lot on this channel so far, but I will say the guide is just that. It's a guide. It kind of ties together all of my content because I do written content and emails. I do this podcast now. I do multiple videos, and each video that I do is 20 minutes long, and sometimes there's 5 or 6 different concepts covered in every video, and maybe that's a problem I have in that I get overly detailed in things, but again, I always want to try to convey the why behind what we're doing as well as be entertaining, and I hope that some of you will find it that way. But because of that, it can get a little confusing, and it can be tough to follow sometimes, and I kind of like that too because it helps keep you thinking. It doesn't get boring. But with that, I did release that guide, and that's also kind of how I monetize these days. And I released that guide, and it just ties everything together, and I promise you, if you get that guide, it will definitely help you. So I recommend that. But anyway, that one for warm season is getting put out this Friday, that update. Now, here's the thing with that. The Prodiamine truck's rolling. It's going to be at the warehouse, but we're having some challenges figuring out boxes, box sizes, and then you have to actually, I mean, I never considered this. I'm learning a lot here. I'm just sharing with you guys. But when you have to box a product, you actually have to order the boxes. You have to have the pay. You have to pay to have the boxes shipped to your shipper so the shipper can put your product in the boxes and then pay to once again ship your shipment to the customer. It's like these boxes get paid for like 20 times over. So figuring that out. Also, we want to make sure we get a box that doesn't allow the product to slosh around in there so it breaks open. So a lot of things, I want to be careful with it. So the actual Prodiamine probably isn't going to start shipping until the beginning of March. So I just want to let you know, I've been telling you guys in the warm season area, don't wait for me. You can get Prodiamine locally in a lot of places. You can definitely get Dithiapyr locally. The two products are interchangeable. You turn it over on the back, you read the label, but typically it's going to be a 3 or 4 pounds per thousand application rate. Again, there's enough in the pre-emergent guides and definitely in the warm season guide to teach you how to make these decisions on your own. And I think you're going to find that when you do that, you're going to feel even better about the products that you buy. I do so thank you, though, for those of you that do buy stuff from me. I mean, again, that's another way that I monetize. I do believe my products that I recommend are very high quality, or I wouldn't be using them or recommending them. So if you are somebody that can wait until you get your shipment sometime in the beginning of March of Prodiamine, then please, by all means, I'll be glad to tell you when you can buy. So I wanted to give that quick update, and I hope that everybody, you know, will continue to work with me on that. Again, I'm trying to expand here too. I've never run a business like this. I mean, I'm a marketing guy. I worked in a startup and I worked for True Green. That's my history. So I'm learning as I go. And I tell you what, the fertilizer, chemical, lawn care industry, the way it works is it's very interesting to say the least. So with that, let's get right out into our Lawns Across America for the week because this is what I really enjoy. And I actually am starting to enjoy this podcast format almost a little bit more than the YouTube video format. I'm kind of like my own like Don Imus thing going on here. But all right, so our first one this week comes from Kevin in South Carolina. Now, Kevin's got a multi-step question here. We're going to go through this because these are all things that are coming up for a lot of you right now. So he says, I'm going to try to tackle my crabgrass problem this year. He goes, I have a yard that's mostly Bermuda with some fescue mixed in, and it used to be a cow pasture. He says, my main question is, would you still use Prodiamine on a larger yard, around 35,000 square feet, and how would you put it out there? So the answer is, 100%, yes. Prodiamine is going to be cheapest by the thousand. It's definitely going to be the cheapest for you with a larger yard. So number one, hands down, prodiamine is where you want to go. Secondly, then he says he's got two different ways that he can apply it. He's got a 25-gallon tank sprayer, he tells me, and he also has a pull-behind spreader. So he can go granular or he can go liquid. And when I say liquid, it's the Prodiamine 65 WDG water dispersible granule that you mix into water. Okay, so that's the liquid when we talk about liquid prodiamine. You can get 5 pounds of that, and that 5 pounds covers, I think, an acre or something like that. But you can get a 5 pound of the WGG for $65. Whereas if you go with the granule, you're going to have to go with probably 2 bags per application. You're looking at 3 applications a year. So, I mean, it's like $55 a bag. So granular is going to cost you like $110 an app, whereas the WDG is going to be much, much less than that. So I would definitely recommend that you go with the WDG formulation for the larger application here, and that you use that 25-gallon sprayer. That's perfect for that. It's only 2 trips to the fill station for you. You should be good. So for sure, Kevin, economically speaking, it's going to be a lot cheaper for you to learn how to do liquid and do it pretty quick. Next, he says, should I worry about the fescue? So he's got fescue in his Bermuda. Yes, I wouldn't want fescue in my Bermuda. And the first thing I would do is just try to mow it out of there. In South Carolina, you guys get some massive heat. That tall fescue is going to have trouble with that, especially if you're chopping it really low. I would mow my Bermuda down to 1 inch, and I would try to mow every 2 to 3 days. That's big, 35,000 square feet. That's a lot of enjoying the mow for sure. But I would definitely try to mow most of it out of there, especially in the summer. That Bermuda would love to be at an inch, and the tall fescue won't like that. So that's the first thing I would do. Secondly, a cheap way to do it is when the Bermuda is totally dormant in the winter, there's going to be a time when the tall fescue won't be dormant because it is more of a cool season grass. It's going to start to grow and thrive and green up sooner than the Bermuda, much sooner actually. At that point, when the tall fescue does begin to grow in the lawn, and the Bermuda is still dormant, you can spot treat it with glyphosate. That's very cheap, and that will get rid of it as well. There are a lot of products you can use, I think, during the year. Revolver may be a brand name, but you know those are expensive, and why sling all those Kims? I recommend that you first try to mow it out. I think that's the best bet. And boy, I'll tell you what, the exercise that you get, that'll be great. The last part of his question is, I plan to do prodiamine first, and then Dimension. And I also have some drive in case I get any escapees. So yeah, that was exactly the strategy we talked about last year, is that we went out first with prodiamine, and then we did a second application in spring of Dimension. The reason we do prodiamine first is because it's the gold standard. It's much cheaper. It sticks in the soil better. That's going to be whether you use the granular or the WDG. It doesn't matter. If you make a proper application of prodiamine pre-emergent, it's going to stick in the soil the same, and it's going to stick in the soil better than dithiapyr. Now, the second half of that was we used in the later part of the year dithiapyr as our follow-up app, and we did that because dithiapyr has some post-emergent activity if any crabgrass did escape. However, I'm adjusting that a little bit this year, but you don't have to. If you prefer to do the split application here, like Kevin is mentioning with prodiamine and dithiapyr, they're interchangeable. Use which one is best for you. You could use all 3 dithiapyr, all 3 prodiamine, as long as you don't go over the recommended label yearly calendar rates. You can use either one. So you're hearing it from me. They're the same thing, pretty much. They're gonna work the same. So get what's available to you, what works best for your lawn size based on the bag size that you can find, whether you wanna go liquid or granular, what works for your budget, you choose. The idea is to get 2 apps in spring and 1 in the fall. Those are what really matter the most. Now, prodiamine is going to be cheaper. It's going to probably be more readily available in a lot of places. The thing about the dithiapyr with that post-emergent crabgrass activity, that's something I learned way back in my True Green days, and that is very true. However, that is mostly true, and this is something that I've been corrected on. The post-emergent activity is mostly true when you use a liquid form of the dithiapyr and you use a surfactant with it. That's a little bit more of a step. That's a lot more. And by the way, getting dithiapyr in a concentrated form that you can mix in water, whether it's, you know, there's, I think there's wettable powders out there. I think there's liquid concentrates. That's very expensive. So with that in mind, you're probably mostly going to be stuck with dithiapyr in a granular form. And that does get a little bit more expensive. So you have to decide on your own. You're going to see in the pre-emergent guide that I send out, it's going to go almost all prodiamine. But I want you to know, for the record, use the one that's best for you. They're going to work exactly the same in most cases. The most important thing at that point is the timing. The timing matters more than the product. Use dithiapyr, use prodiamine. It's the timing that matters most. And then of course he's got Drive. That's great. Drive is quinclorac. Drive is just a commercial brand name for quinclorac. And quinclorac, just for you guys that are listening, is what we use when crabgrass does escape. And some's gonna escape. It's gonna happen. So when you get a little bit of crabgrass there in the fall, you see it in late summer, bing, bang, boom, you get a little quinclorac or Drive, you spray on that, you're good to go. Well, all right, that was a lot to start out with and a lot to digest there. I wanted to just come back in here real quick and tie up a couple loose ends with that. First of all, I realized that in this segment I used dimension and dithiapyr. Those are actually the same thing. Dithiapyr is the active ingredient. Dimension is the brand name. So if you hear me use those terms, dithiapyr and prodiamine are interchangeable. That would also mean that dimension is interchangeable with prodiamine. And just so you know, prodiamine also has a brand name you might see, and that brand name is Barricade. Lastly, when I talked about quinclorac in the end as a post-emergent control for crabgrass, just realize that's only for certain grass types. That's for the cool season grasses, it's for zoysia, and it's also for Bermuda. But I would stay away from quinclorac on St. Augustine grass and centipede. And with that, let's head right back into the studio and our next question. All right, now let's swing not too far away. We're going to swing right over to Charlotte, North Carolina. We got Todd here. This is Todd's question for the week. He says, I'm here in Charlotte, North Carolina. I have a lot of winter weeds in my tall fescue lawn. It's coming up mostly where my turf is thin. It looks like henbit and chickweed, among others. My question is, do I treat them? This is a great question, Todd. I actually addressed this in my video on the Lawn Care Nut channel for the week. We kind of went over some winter annuals, and I also put those in my email blast that I sent out this week. If you're not on the email list, you can get on that at thelawncarenut.com, and we'll send you a weekly email blast that kind of backs all this up. But these are winter annuals. Let's first talk about henbit, because you guys are going to find henbit pretty much all over the country, up north as well. I used to have some in my backyard in Indiana, in Northwest Indiana. I used to hide that from you guys mostly, but there are a couple videos where it showed up and we talked about it. So henbit is actually going to grow from seed, and it'll grow in the fall. It's a winter annual, so the seeds grow in fall, and you'll see it start to show up, and it looks a lot like Creeping Charlie. In fact, I often find henbit growing with Creeping Charlie in cool season areas. I don't think that'll happen in Charlotte. I don't think there's quite as much Creeping Charlie issue down there because of how warm it is, but the henbit definitely thrives. It's going to have a purple-pink flower on it, and it's got a little bit of an upright growth habit, but it will definitely choke out areas of the lawn. So it survives vegetatively over the wintertime, and then in the spring it starts to rage and really grow when soil temps start to get 55 is when it really all start to rage. There's some overlap there with our other soil temp milestones. And then, you know, once your outside air temps get, you know, into the higher 70s in the spring and the later spring and into the 80s, the henbit will die because it's an annual, but it'll drop seeds, prolific drop seeds at that time. Those seeds will sit in the lawn all summer. And then as the soil temps start to come down in the fall, it will germinate again and the whole henbit lifestyle starts over again. So that's kind of how that lifestyle works. So the way that you want to stop henbit, and I know I'm dancing around the question here, Todd, but I got to get in the right frame of mind here. We got to kind of watch the calendar in our minds so you can get ahead of this for next year as well. What you want to do is in the fall, as soil temps fall to 70 degrees coming out of summer, you want to put down a pre-emergent, prodiamine or dithiapyr. That's going to stop other things too, but it's going to definitely work on henbit. Prodiamine is labeled for henbit, and it works well, actually. You can also stop your Poa annua at that time, which is annual bluegrass. There's a few others that'll come into play here. Chickweed, I think, is on the list as well, another winter annual that you can stop by putting down a pre-emergent in the fall. So the first thing is, Todd, be ready with a pre-emergent strategy come fall time, for sure. What can you do now, though? Pretty much any of your products that you can go get over the counter, they're going to have 2,4-D, MCPP, yeah, you know me. Any of those are going to work on henbit. It's a little bit tougher to control the more mature it gets, but definitely you want to kind of spray it out of there if you can to try to limit the number of seeds that it is going to drop. So definitely anything over the counter that you can get is going to work, and you should go out and spray. Now, the one thing to think about with post-emergent weed controls, though, is you do not want to apply a post-emergent weed control if outside air temps are falling below 49 for a good portion of the day and definitely overnight. The reason is because the way these herbicides work is that they have to get into the plant and work their way through the plant in order to kill the plant. And the plant will stop growing if temps start to get into the 40s. So if the weed is not growing, then the product can't make its way through the weed to kill it. And the efficacy of the product will wear off. It's not like these things last forever. They have a life that they live and then they're done. You know, they just wear off, just how it works. So don't want to use too many technical terms there. But the idea being, you don't want to spray when it's cold because it can make your application fail. So there's some couple ideas there about henbit. Again, it's a big problem this time of year, and a lot of you guys are seeing it, I'm sure. All right, next one, let's go over to Pittsburgh, Kansas. And we got Micah writing in. Micah says, I purchased my first home in the middle of summer last year. Congratulations, Micah. I love it when I hear about you guys getting your first home and now you're working on getting the lawn. By the way, the lawn is the only living asset at your house if you think about it. Everything else when you buy a house is dead. Countertops, tile floors, what else? Cabinetry, you know, everything. Sliding glass doors, windows, doors. All that stuff is dead, the roof. But the lawn is living. And I'll tell you, it will let you know if you're neglecting it very quickly. So I just love when I hear about you guys getting a new lawn and you're going to work on the living piece of it. That's awesome. So I live in Pittsburgh, Kansas in the transition zone. I watched your YouTube channel. You helped me get my front yard up to par with turf type tall fescue. Awesome, Micah. This spring, I would like to get my backyard in better shape. By the way, I just want to say, this is a good strategy for those of you that are just starting out. Micah's smart. You know what? Don't try to do the whole thing in 1 year. Do the front first. Get that looking good. Learn some lessons there, then move to the back, or maybe start the other way. But it's good to, you know, eat the elephant in bites. That's a really good idea. So I just want to point that out. That's a smart strategy that a lot of people take on. I plan on putting down a pre-emergent to help control crabgrass problem along the edges of my backyard, okay? My backyard neighbor's driveway is parallel with my backyard with about an 800 square foot patch of grass that is evenly divided between our two properties. Okay, so they're sharing a strip of grass between the two properties. And half of that strip is his and half of it's the neighbor's. Can I put pre-emergent down only on my properties to successfully control this issue? So the answer is yes. And in this case, you're definitely gonna wanna use a liquid because it's a thin stripped area and you wanna keep a very sharp line between you and your neighbor. And yes, you will end up seeing crabgrass on their side and not on your side. It'll be very evident of that line. So that's the first answer, but there's more to this. So let's reiterate. Can I put pre-emergent down only on my property to successfully control this issue? Yes. Or should I just bite the bullet and lay it down on my neighbor's property also? I know my neighbor would not care if I put it on her lawn. I know crabgrass can spread, and I would like to start building strong turf. So let's stop there. So the answer is, that is exactly what you should do, Micah, is go talk to your neighbor and tell her what you're doing and go, hey, I'm going to keep this crabgrass out of here for both of us. And I think that's a great thing to do, especially if you already know that she's going to be cool about it. Then you go and you make that a positive. Be like, hey, there's this nasty stuff I'm learning about. It's crabgrass. It'll destroy our lawns. It gets ugly. You know, I was going to spray it on my half, but since I'm already over right there and we share that area, do you mind if I just treat your lawn for your section of the lawn there for the crabgrass too? Why not? And maybe you do the whole lawn, Micah, you know, if you want to. If she gives you permission, I mean, that's not that big a deal. That's a nice way to really help your neighbor, help their lawn look better. But for sure, it can spread and the seeds will spread. So even if you did your half, there would definitely be a division between hers and yours if crabgrass did sprout there. But certainly those seeds will get over into yours and continue causing your problem. So it's better to eradicate the larger problem and look at the bigger picture. So definitely do that. Just get her permission first. So that was pretty much the end of his question there. He's working on getting his turf healthy. So Micah, I love your thinking, dude. You're right on. Good job on that. And at the very end, he says, thanks for all your content. You've been extremely helpful. I'm loving Lawns Across America. Thanks, bro. And then he says here, he goes, I never saw if you got back at Connor Ward for stealing your flamingo. So no, for those of you who don't know, Connor Ward, when he was here visiting, he kleptoed one of my pink flamingos and he sent it down under to Australia for Ben at Lawn Tips to shoot it with all kinds of things. So crazy. I don't know where it'll end up, but I'm sure it's coming back up this way. So this is a general Southern type question. Comes from somebody named Jesse. Jesse says, hello, I was watching your videos on your lawn plug row and was wondering if I killed my weeded lawn off with glyphosate and planted Bimini Bermuda plugs, could I use the same fertilizer and chemicals that you used? So for those of you that don't know, a couple years ago, I moved to St. Petersburg, which is where I was born and raised, actually. And when I did that, I bought a small house there, and the lawn was a complete salad bar. It was 99.99% weeds. We had two sections of St. Augustine grass that were viable that I did save, but other than that, it was nothing. So I did a complete rehab there. I glyphosated the whole thing down, and instead of doing sod, which I couldn't afford at the time and really wasn't ready to take on that much labor, I went with plugs, grass plugs. And that was a lot of fun, and I learned a lot of things there. So let me just tell you what Jesse's referencing. And the first thing is that I used a pre-emergent, and you should use a pre-emergent when you install plugs in a large area like that. If you're just doing a small little section, you know, to try to fill in a little shady spot with some, you know, some palmetto or something like that, I mean, that's not a big deal. But if you're doing square footage, 1,000 square foot or more, you're going to want to hedge your bets with pre-emergent herbicides in and along with those plugs, because what happens when you plant plugs, it's literally a small little plant. It's got a full root system and a top. And with our grass types, St. Augustine is what I did, and he's going to do Bermuda. They spread with rhizobes and stolons. So they take and you plant that plug in the ground, and then they just shoot out and spread out across until they all meet and they form a dense mat of turf. That's how we grow things here in the South. And in fact, I consider plugs to be our grass seed. That's kind of how I look at it. When you do that, though, you do have a lot of turf or I'm sorry, when you do that, you have a lot of dirt or open soil between the plugs for several weeks as they fill in. Now, you can do things to speed it up, but you want to hedge your bets there, and that's why you'd apply a pre-emergent to help keep down weed pressure in between the plugs as they're growing in, because if there is more weed competition there, it's only going to hurt your grow. So I used prodiamine, and that was a mistake, and I don't recommend that. Prodiamine is fine for established warm season turf. It works great. But in a plugging situation, it can have an effect on those new rhizomes or stolons, especially the rhizomes as they shoot across the top of the lawn and they try to root down. Those roots can be stunted or they can just not even attach from the prodiamine. It's okay, again, in an established lawn that's thick and healthy or is thick enough that it's got a fairly dense turf patch. You're not going to have any issue with that, or not enough to be noticeable. But when you're trying to start something brand new from plugs, it is noticeable. And so I would not recommend prodiamine or dithiapyr when you're doing a plugging. I would actually recommend Pennant Magnum. That is going to also stop more weed problems that you might have, and it depends where you live, but it's going to stop all of the same crabgrass, poa annua, all of those things, but it will also suppress sedges, and it will also stop doveweed, which is a major problem I had in Florida. I'm not sure exactly where you're at, Jesse, but I just recommend Pennant Magnum because you won't have the problem with that tacking. So that's what I recommend there. As far as products to use, this comes straight from Jonathan Brown. I've gone out to the sod farm now a few different times and spoken with him, and he has told me in no uncertain terms that plugs do not need fertilizer from the jump. They come with the fertilizer already in the soil because a grass plug comes with soil and root system and mycorrhizae and all the good stuff right there. So all you need to do is drop that in. The one thing you need to do is give it water, of course, and then the second thing you can do is you can stimulate growth by using like some sea kelp and some humic acid. Both sod farms that I visited, both of the growers are huge advocates of humic acid and sea kelp, cytokine type stuff to really stimulate growth. I obviously recommend RGS, 3 ounce per thousand. You can do that every 2 weeks, all on top of your plugs. And then once you get to 30 days, that's when you can actually start putting down fertilizer. Whatever you choose, I would start pushing it lightly with a half to 3/4 pound, working it in and just working how it goes. Bermuda is going to like more nitrogen for sure. So there's a quick little ramble on that. But definitely don't use the prodiamine. That's a lesson that I learned. And I am going to do some more plug testing here coming up sometime, hopefully in the late spring here, once we get everything launched and kicked off here. I have a tentative agreement where I can go and get a little area and do some different plug testing. If you haven't seen the plug tests I did in the pots, you should definitely check out my most recent video from Sunday, because they look like giant alien jellyfish coming out of the pots. The root systems were just so thick. So really cool stuff there. All right, before we head out to our next question, let me just reiterate one thing I said here, because I think I was misspeaking back in the studio there. Prodiamine will affect the tacking down of stolons. I don't think it affects rhizomes, but definitely stolons. So if you're doing any kind of plugging, and Bermuda runs with stolon and rhizomes, and of course St. Augustine runs with stolon. But the thing with prodiamine and dithiapyr is it can affect the tacking down of those stolons. And it did in fact do that in my St. Pete grow. I didn't actually realize it until later when our friend Matt Martin kind of corrected me on it and let me know that that is what I was seeing. So with that, if you do use a pre-emergent in a situation where you're doing plugs, I recommend Pennant Magnum. And then as far as using biostimulants, push those hard for a full month and start fertilizing after 30 days. With that, let's get right back out to our next question across America. All right, now the next question I've been getting, again, this is not necessarily designed to hit a certain area of the country. This is all of you. And this one is coming in though a lot in the South, just because people are looking at doing this right now as things warm up. And that the question is, can I put down a pre-emergent herbicide and a post-emergent herbicide together? So let's talk about those two different things. A pre-emergent herbicide is obviously designed to go down before weeds or weedy grasses germinate, and it stops them from ever showing up, okay? That's how a pre-emergent herbicide works. We already know we put the first pre-emergent down as soil temps are about to approach 55, and we put the second down as soil temps are rising to 70. That's gonna stop mainly crabgrass, but there are some others that it will stop, and in the fall we can talk even more. That's pre-emergent. Post-emergent is designed to kill weeds that have already come up. And this time of year, you're going to see, we talked about, you've seen hembit, you're going to see chickweed. I'm seeing some oxalis in my yard. You're probably going to be seeing a lot of hairy bittercress or bittercress around. Dandelions will be coming up soon in a lot of areas. It's just a lot of things are going to be starting here. And you're going to want to be able to hit those at the same time. Can you tank mix the two together? The answer for most cases is yes. If you need to blanket spray your lawn because it's a salad bar with weeds, but you also want to put down a pre-emergent, in most cases, especially if you're using over-the-counter liquid concentrate weed controls, you can mix those with prodiamine in the tank and spray out 1,000 square feet and 1 gallon. That is a lot more advanced, actually, and I don't recommend doing that if you're somebody that is not comfortable with spraying from a hand can or backpack sprayer. But the answer is, for the most part, you can. Now, most labels will tell you to do a jar test just to make sure stuff doesn't bubble and foam. I definitely recommend you do that. Do a small mix on the side just to make sure you're not going to bubble up anything or anything like that. But again, if you're using prodiamine or dithiopyr, and in general, most cases, you're using the over-the-counter concentrated weed controls that you can get that have like 2,4-D in them and MCPP and dicamba, those can mix with prodiamine or dithiopyr in a tank and be fine as long as you understand how to cover 1,000 square feet by combining them together. Again, a lot more advanced math. We are definitely not getting into that anytime soon. Now, the next question would be then, Alan, no, I'm not talking about tank mixing them, bruh. I just mean, can I put them down on the same day? Yes, you can. And that would be like if you're going to do a granular prodiamine or a liquid prodiamine, you put that down and then, you know, an hour later or whenever you're done, you mix up your weed control, whatever way you're going to do that, and you spray that down. No problem there. Now, just keep in mind, some weed controls, they need to sit on the plant for 24 hours or so to really get into the leaves. They absorb foliarly, whereas prodiamine and pre-emergence need to be watered in to get into the soil so they can get in through the roots. So you just want to watch that watering there. It may be smart to do the prodiamine today, water it in, and then tomorrow do your post-emergent. Do it that way. But the answer is they're not going to interfere with one another. They're both going after something different. They're both on a different mode of action. So applying them in the same day on top of one another or whatever is fine. Just be concerned about your watering in type deal. So that one will start coming up more and more. And yeah, you're free to do them together. All right, next one. This is an interesting one that's been coming in quite a bit because a lot of you guys have clay soil. And for some reason, somebody's made you think that your clay soil is bad or evil or that you're in trouble or that you can't have a nice lawn on clay soil. So here's the question right here. And I don't know that Matthew feels that way, but here's what Matthew says. He says, we're moving to a new home. Congratulations, Matthew. We're moving to a new home and the soil has a very high clay content and it's very compacted. It was suggested to me that I use liquid gypsum to soften the soil and get water and nutrients to flow deeper into the soil. Do you agree with using liquid gypsum? So here's the deal with that, Matthew. I have no idea. I've never used gypsum on a lawn, but I have worked on thousands of clay soil lawns. When I worked at True Green in Northwest Indiana, we had the worst clay soil. Up by the lake, we actually had sandy soil, and it was weird. There must have been some glacial thing. South in DeMott, we had sandy soil, but in between was all just this nasty gray Northwest Indiana, sticky, hard in the summer, cracked clay soil. It was just, bleh, right? But guess what? Thousands of beautiful lawns grew on that nasty soil. And 90% of those lawns, 99% of those lawns were not necessarily treated the way that we do. They weren't treated at all. Maybe they had some fertilizer thrown down here and there. We were True Green. We weren't doing anything to improve the soil with it necessarily. We were just throwing down stuff and those lawns look great. So here's the thing. Whoever suggested to you that, tell them that your soil is okay. Your soil is good. You got to love the soil that you have. That's the first thing. And that's really what I wanted to go with this. Clay soil is great. If you want to improve clay soil, and I think you should, especially if you're watching this channel, you're kind of interested in doing some things, pulling some levers, you know, learning some, you know, messing around with some things. I recommend that you get carbon in the soil. And the number one way to get carbon in the soil is to start using organic fertilizers. Organic fertilizers are also going to feed soil microbes, which are going to make your root system healthier. And that's going to improve your clay soil overall. We really want to kind of improve that symbiosis between the soil and the grass plant themselves and the roots. And the way we do that is to put things that help improve that in between. And carbon is one of those. Microbes also will thrive in that environment. And then I also recommend you throw down humic acid, another chelator. It drives down, it breaks bonds, it helps to release organic material that may exist in there or the organic material that you're putting in. I also recommend that you stimulate the grass roots to grow. That's why we use RGS. We want those cytokines in there to really push that root growth and push that shoot growth, and if it's applicable. We want to get things moving. We want to get all of that working together. That's how you improve your soil. So that's the main thing to worry about, is not using gypsum to make your soil better. It's making the soil optimized so that it can live on its own a little bit better. And that's why I recommend carbon as the way to go. And so that's what I would recommend you do, and your clay soil is not bad. Now, if you do want to mechanically aerate, I think that's a great idea. It makes a good seed bed, all these kind of things. But I think mechanical aeration is a good experience for you to have in your lawn in general. I'm telling you, when you aerate your lawn and you get your ass kicked at it, you're going to feel better about it. You're going to learn things about your land. You're going to understand, I don't know, it's hard to explain, but if you go out, take the trouble to rent that aerator and let it beat you up a little bit and get out, you're going to learn something about your lawn. By the way, you'll pick up the cores, you'll look at the cores, that'll kind of let you see the layers of your soil, you see what it looks like a couple inches down. There's a lot of good things you get out of mechanical aeration. So I definitely recommend that's something you do as well, if not just for the experience alone. All right, well, that's another one of those that I feel like I need to add a little more clarification to as I continue to learn to get this podcast style down. I want to say that when I had my lawn in Northwest Indiana, I used Milorganite Biosolids and Ringer Lawn Restore pretty much exclusively, and I had beautifully soft clay soil. It had some nice black topsoil in it, and it was super healthy, and the lawn stayed super green. Even in summer, I didn't even have to water very much. That's because I improved the soil with organic fertilizers. That's the cheapest, easiest, quickest way for you to get started. If you want to add on the bells and whistles with the RGS and the Humic 12 and all that stuff, please feel free to do it, but you're not obligated to that. Just get over-the-counter, cheap, organic fertilizers, start throwing down every 4 to 5 weeks, and you'll improve that soil very quickly. With that, let's get to our next question out in the lawn. And this is Bill. Bill says, Alan, I live in South Alabama. We just moved into a new house. Great job, Bill. Congratulations, dude. Seriously. He says, it has a well-established zoysia lawn. The past homeowner didn't do much maintenance other than cutting. And with that being said, this last spring and summer, I started working on it, and it's coming around nicely. My main question, as you know, with zoysia turf is it gets very thick and builds up a dense thatch layer that needs to be dethatched and aerated yearly. What are your suggestions? So I'm going to tell you my first suggestion is I've talked to the sod growers out at Council Farms. I work with Travis Council out there when I got my Empire zoysia. And he said the very number one mistake that people make with zoysia is they mow it too tall. They mow it like it's St. Augustine grass. You want to mow zoysia down to 1 inch. You could even go lower, but I'm pretty sure with most homeowner mowers, you're not going to be able to get below 1 inch. So start mowing that zoysia down to 1 inch. You're going to have to train it down there. You're going to have to get it down there. It might be a little bit painful, but I think as you do that, you'll probably get rid of a good portion of the thatch that you have, you know, catch clippings, take it down over a matter of time. But that's what you want to do. You want to get it down to that 1 inch. Once you get it down there, I don't know how big your lawn is. If there is still a thatch problem there, you can do some raking. Obviously, we have the dethatch product. Yes, you can use that. It's not going to interfere with any other treatments you're doing, and it'll burn the thatch out of there. But really, my main goal here for you with zoysia, all of you guys, is to start mowing low. That will right there avoid the thatch buildup to begin with. So that's really the key there. Anything to do with zoysia, mow low. So with that, that's the last question that we had this week, guys. I hope that these tips are continuing to help you. And again, don't forget, visit us at thelawncarenut.com where you can sign up for our newsletter that also backs up this podcast, as well as go to YouTube and search for The Lawn Care Nut, which is our main YouTube channel where I do all kinds of tips and real life stuff that's going on in my lawn every single week. With that, this concludes episode 4 of Lawns Across America. I'm Alan Hain, The Lawn Care Nut. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you in the lawn.